up, everybody? Welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin, back from a week in our nation's capital, right before the Olympics, getting my America on. And I'm back to talk about a little Suicide Squad with my good friend, my very own chocolate bear, Mr. Gerald Goodridge. What's up, G?
Not too much, man. I am sitting here chilling, hoping that if I'm ever given one choice after saving the world, that I will not pick BET. just hoping.
Hold on. You mean that all black people don't just watch BET? They just don't watch 106 and Park in their spare time? Is that what you're telling me?
That is pretty accurate as to what the description. I don't know if I've watched BET since 2003, maybe.
Well, then how do you keep up with the Source Awards?
Well, I take that back. They used to replay The Wire in college, and I didn't have HBO at the time, and so I was like, I just need my Wire fix. And so they skipped season two for some reason. I don't know why BET skipped season two of The Wire.
Oh, who could guess why they would skip season two?
Oh yeah, that's the one with the that didn't take place with the African American cast. That's what it is. That's why BET skipped season two.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that. That's true.
They did not play season two. They just went 1, 3, 4.
Oh, that's fantastic. That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Killer Croc, a.k.a. the overtly racist character in Suicide Squad, as well as the rest of Suicide Squad later on. But before we do that, we'll get into the news, and we'll start with a trailer that I actually saw before I watched Suicide Squad, and that is the Dunkirk trailer, the latest, I think it's fair to call these epics at this point, from Christopher Nolan, who used to make DC movies when DC movies were good. I kind of like the look of this trailer. I'm a little worried about where it's going. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I don't think they showed enough for me to have any sort of thoughts either way. I mean, it's Christopher Nolan, so he gets my money. I mean, Christopher Nolan, Tom Hardy, Cillian Murphy, like those three, you put them in a movie and I'll be there opening night. I'm interested to see if they do any sort of like Christopher Nolan sci-fi twist, or if this is a straight historical war movie. Like, is it just the Battle of Dunkirk from World War II, or is it, you know, the crazy sci-fi twist? Because I don't know, Nolan's never done a straightforward movie, to my recollection. You know, it's always been, you know, something partially grounded in reality, but still with a bit of a hook to it. You know, even like Memento, like that had a hook to it. You know, it wasn't super crazy, but the guy had not Alzheimer's, but you know, the memory issues, so he couldn't remember what was happening. So there was always a hook to it. So I that's the thing that's got me questioning. Again, Nolan hasn't really made a bad movie. Say what you want about Interstellar. There are people that don't like it. There are people that love it. So I think there are.
Wait, there are people that don't like Interstellar?
There are people that don't like Interstellar. I try not to associate with them as much
as
I can.
Thank you. That's a good decision.
But yeah, so I don't, like, literally, like, the synopsis of it on, like, if you look at IMDb, it's one sentence. Allied soldiers from Belgium, Britain, Canada, and France surrounded by the German army and evacuated during a fierce World War II battle. Like, that tells me nothing. But again, I'm fine with that. I'm happy going into a movie not knowing what's going to happen. Totally happy with that. And that's what I love about Nolan films.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. I hadn't even really thought of that. I just assumed he would do it straight. But it's funny that you mentioned that maybe he's not, because this trailer kind of smacked of a monster movie, right?
Yes.
With the rising music, you have the shock crowds slowly looking towards the heavens in bewilderment. You have the fact that you never actually see the quote-unquote monster. In this case, it looks like it's going to be a plane strafing them, right? Which would be true of what happened in Dunkirk historically. But it was kind of the interesting in the way it was shot. I have concerns about where they're going to go with this movie. Dunkirk, for those of you who don't know, it was a, you know, it is true that the Allied forces were surrounded. They got kind of cut off. And then for some reason, the Germans, it's kind of a hotly contested reason, the Germans stopped their advance. And that gave the British enough time to evacuate, I believe, most of the troops. I don't remember there being much of a battle there. I don't remember there being anything particularly noteworthy or heroic that happened. So I'm confused at the story. Unless they kind of go kind of enemy at the gates where they make a hero, they make an individual kind of battle within the war, which is what I think Enemy at the Gates did really well. Mm-hmm. Unless they go somewhere like that, I really don't know where this is going. So the way the trailer kind of came off that, and then plus my just not knowing where they're going with the movie, makes that kind of suggestion that you have very interesting about maybe he's going to not play this straight. Maybe there's a turning, you know, there's a twist here, a Shyamalama Ding Dong in here.
Yeah.
Which actually, Shyamalama Ding Dong's coming out with a new movie too.
Looks is funny. He? What?
I forgot what it's called. I saw a preview for it before Born, actually. So
what a twist. Yeah. No, so I think I'm looking at some trivia about it, but he used actual naval destroyers from World War II, like, for filming. And so I think he's gonna go straight with it. Like I would be surprised, but again, it's Nolan, so it's hard for me. I guess Insomnia, now that I think about it, is one that didn't really have anything, you know, supernatural or sci-fi to it. But yeah, so I am like, Christopher Nolan gets a straight, he gets a pass on whatever. Like I will see his soul. I've never seen him make a bad film. So I'm in hook, line, and sinker. But again, I'm interested to see, like, Harry Styles is in this movie. Yeah. So they haven't released, like, who he is. Fangirls were pissed that he wasn't in the trailer, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I like that he's casting British people. I mean, you get British people in a World War II movie, so it's pretty historically accurate. So I'm okay with that. Again, I don't know if there's much for him to do other than straight history. And I think I'm excited. I'm very, very excited.
And it's going to be in 70mm too. Yes. It's going to be available, which is. I'm in on that, even though that Tarantino movie, what was that Tarantino movie that just came out?
Hateful Eight.
Yeah, The Hateful Eight. Even though that wasn't very good, it was still cool. It was still cool to see. So I'm in. I'm 100% and I'm with you. Next little piece of news. Apparently, this is the report that ABC and Lucasfilms are in quote unquote early talks for a Star Wars live action television show. Now, this has been something that has been, I guess, desired or hotly anticipated by the Star Warsians. What do the Star Warsians, what do Star Wars fans call themselves? I don't even know.
Star Wars fans?
That's not good enough.
There's never been a term that I've been aware of that we call
Star
ourselves.
Warsians. That's what we're
Warsies.
Warsies. That's pretty good.
That sounds like a really terrible thing you picked up in, like, the trenches of World War
I. Yeah, yeah. Warzies. Well, how did he lose his foot? You know, he got that Warzies.
He got the Warzies.
So this is something that the Warzies have been looking forward to for quite some time. So I'm assuming that this is something that you're pretty excited about.
Yeah, I think it could be good. I hope they do something that's all different. Like, I'm really curious. Like, I always think back to the canceled LucasArts game, the Star Wars 1313, that was going to explore the seedy underbelly beneath Coruscant, the criminal element. I'd love to see, like, a mob show set in Coruscant, or, like, even if they get a little bit of a budget, see it set in, like, Hutt space. Now Hutta is a really, really cool area to explore when you're thinking of the criminal element and the crime, you know, having the Hutts running gambling rings and, you know, illegal races and things like that. It's just super, super interesting to see.
They could do a Spinal Tap-like version with a cantina band. That'd be fun for everybody, right?
Yeah, I think as long as they do the Jedi Rocks that they did in the re-releases, would be the way to go. Like, you,
yeah,
can't,
absolutely. It'd be fantastic.
You got to make it over the top and terrible CG with a guy that looks like a cross between a Raid commercial and a possum, I think is the best way to describe it.
Yeah. No, that was great. And they, like really is serious about his clarinet and oboes. Like, super serious about it.
I mean, why wouldn't you be? But no, I think the only other thing that I really like to see is I would love to see, I don't want to call it a procedural, but more of, like, something along the lines of, like, Rogue Squadron that we're going to get some hints of in Rogue One, where it's pilots and they're, you know, going up against, I almost think of, like, Battlestar Galactica, where it's something on that along those lines, where it's, you know, a day in the life of a pilot, and that it's punctuated by some really cool space battles Again, I think it comes back down to budget. Like, what kind of budget do they get with this? Do they get more budget? Do they get less budget? Because we've seen with something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where if the budget's not good, it looks like just crap. So you don't want to put something on TV that's not going to look to the standard of what Star Wars is putting out now. Because say what you want about the plot of The Force Awakens, but the movie looks fantastic. And say what you want about the plot of Rogue One, but that movie, from all accounts, looks fantastic. So I think there's a standard now that's been set where it's got to look good. It's got to look practical, because I think that's one of the things that really helped Force Awakens was it looked practical. Even in spots where they augmented it with CG, it looked like it was real sets. It looked like it was real, like it looked like the desert went on for miles and miles, because it did. But, you know, you think of like the scene at the end in the forest, like that was a matte painting. Like there were only, it was a matte painting and a soundstage. So like it's got to look that good.
So I think you made a couple good points that kind of feed into my thoughts on it. The first is that I don't think Star Wars has ever felt episodic in any way, which makes doing a television show kind of difficult. But they proved with Clone Wars, I think a little bit, that they could do episodic. And you mentioned procedural. Clone Wars was very much a procedural.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. It was a procedural in the same vein as Star Trek, in the way that it happened. So I think that avenue exists. And if they want to do a television show similar, I guess, in the same vein as what Trek has done, you know, just to confuse the people that don't know the difference between Star Trek, Star Wars, and Star Trek even more, I think that avenue is open to them. I don't know if I particularly want to see that, but I think that that would be the easiest avenue to doing a Star Wars TV show. The question I would have is about, you know, where do you put it? Like, what time period are we talking about? Is this old Empire? Is this going on during the events of the, you know, first trilogy or the second trilogy or the present trilogy? Is this like the Clone Wars in between? You know, what are we talking about here with this time period? And because that'll go, I think, a long way in determining how excited people are about it.
Yeah, and I think the thing with that is you're kind of running out of real estate for what you do, because the books that they're putting out are covering a lot of what happened prior to, like, between episode 3 and episode 4. And then you finally got some books that are taking, filling in the gaps between episode 6 and episode 7. So really, the most fertile ground is that Old Republic time frame, but not a lot of people really care about that outside of your hardcore fans. Not many people care about the Old Republic. Not many people are interested in that.
Well, the best video game they had in the Star Wars canon was, other than Battlefront, obviously, the best video game they had in the Star Wars canon other than Battlefront was Knights of the Old Republic. And that storyline was interesting. It looked pretty cool. Like, I liked that game quite a bit. I think that's the right name, but it's from that time period.
Yep. No, it's Knights of the Old Republic. It's BioWare. Like, how does it get any better than that? Yeah, that was kind of the first time I fell in love with BioWare. But yeah, I think... But even that was predicated on some knowledge of Jedi and some knowledge of... So you've really got to look at, can I get the casual viewer to watch this? Can I get the casual viewer to have some sort of touchstone enough where they're going to want to sit down and watch this? Because I think that's been the issue with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., why it hasn't ever picked up, is because you're either a huge Marvel fan or you're not watching it. Like, you want to see it all connected or you don't care. So I think that's the same danger that you run into with the Star Wars TV shows. You've got to find a way to make it palatable and make it open to those that are not already in it, because that's not going to make you any new money. And that's really what, you know, we love watching good movies, but good movies make money, and that's why people keep making good movies.
Well, sometimes they make money.
Sometimes.
And other times, Bad Moms makes a lot of money. Next little bit of news is about I believe this is an anime, because I don't follow anime at all, right? Mm-hmm.
It was a manga turned into an anime, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so this is well outside my zone. but you're going to talk about it, and it has me interested because of the man it's about, and that is Willem Dafoe, who can do no wrong, and who is cast as Demon in Death Note. So take it away, Gerald. Edumacate us all.
Yeah, so William Dafoe was cast as the demon Ryuk, is how I think how you pronounce it. I'm that terrible hipster that doesn't watch anime dubbed. I watch it in subtitles because I'm that kind of person. Don't hate me too much.
I've lost about 13 levels of respect for you.
So we agree that you watch foreign films with subtitles, but watching anime with subtitles is somehow too far.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Just want
to... because they are, and I'm about to alienate a lot of people, cartoons.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
So they can move their mouse however you want them to move their mouse. They don't move their mouse in sync anyway, so what does it matter?
Yeah,
they did voiceover work anyway. What does it matter?
Yeah. So the story of Death Note is you've got this teenage boy who's kind of an outcast, kind of, you know, just on the fringes of society, and he stumbles across a notebook from Ryuk, the demon that Willem Dafoe has been cast as. He's kind of like a clown faced demon, which is so fitting for Willem Dafoe. So he comes across this supernatural notebook. And basically how it works is if you write somebody's name in it, they will die. So you write their name in it, and it's literally a death note. You write their name, and they die. And so it turns into, like, he kind of gets drunk on power, and he's trying to create a world that's cleansed of the people that he deems as evil. So it's all about, like, his judgment, who's evil, who's not. And so he's kind of the god of it. And then there's a side story with a detective who kind of figures out what's going on and is trying to stop him. But I'm really, really intrigued because it's such a weird anime, and I'm really interested to see because Netflix is basically doing a feature-length film of it. And so I'm really interested to see how they take this long manga, this long anime, and translate it into a 90-minute, you know, 120-minute film. Again, I think starting with a good cast is the way to go, and having Willem Dafoe cast in a very creepy, very, like, that you're introduced to this character because he's kind of just sitting up, like, the first time you see him, he's kind of just gangly and sitting and observing and just looking evil, and that's one thing that I think Willem Dafoe can do really, really well, and so I'm intrigued. Again, anytime I see Netflix doing original movies, I get a little leery. They do really well with TV shows, but their track record on movies has been like two Adam Sandler things, and I think that's it. Some documentaries, maybe. So scripted TV show or scripted movies, I'm still not sold on. But again, Willem Dafoe really doesn't sign on to do bad things or things he doesn't believe in. So I'm really interested to see how this works out, what the script is like. Because again, you can definitely make a good movie out of this if you do it well.
Yeah. More Willem Dafoe in my life is
never a bad thing.
Fine by me. I'm in.
Never a bad thing.
Sold. So some news that I am actually I have a longer history with, shall we say.
How much longer could it get, Raymond?
I don't really know what that means.
How much longer could your history be than your history with anime, Raymond? You have zero history with anime. I was trying to make a sarcastic joke about.
That's not true. That's not completely true.
Okay, I keep adding qualifiers.
I used to skip football practice in seventh grade to get home to watch Dragon Ball Z. So thank you very much.
Okay.
That was an excuse my coaches were, interestingly enough, not thrilled about.
Oh, okay.
Who would have thought that?
Who would have thought it?
Around that time, I was skipping seventh grade football practice to watch Dragon Ball Z. A little game by the name of StarCraft came out. Perhaps the best RTS game of all time. I did not play as much StarCraft as I did Warcraft 2, but I still loved the game. It's certainly up there among my favorites, right up there with Civilizations 3, with my favorite kind of real-time games. And it turns out that they're going to release an HD version of StarCraft, an updated version of StarCraft, which is something that I'm pretty excited about. I have, for some reason, recently started going back and playing the Half-Life mods. Like, I started playing Counter-Strike and Day of Defeat again. Just randomly, I decided on, like, a Tuesday that's how I wanted to spend my time.
Okay.
And so I'm assuming that as soon as this comes out, I'm going to be in as well. How about you?
Yeah, we've talked about it before how much of a Blizzard fanboy I am, but StarCraft was one of those one of those games that like really captured me. Again, like Blizzard knows what to do with a real-time strategy game. I've been begging for games like StarCraft, or like I would love to see a Command and Conquer like Red Alert re-release happen in a couple years. It wasn't Blizzard, but it was amazing, seminal part of my childhood. But no, I think StarCraft is going to be great. I think Blizzard, anything they do just prints money, so I think they're going to make a ton of money on this. They did just put out like a big expansion for StarCraft II last year, Legacy of the Void, which is actually one of the more highly rated RTS games to come out in the last decade. Granted, you haven't had a ton of them, but Legacy of the Void was huge, and it kind of closed the circle on the whole Kerrigan storyline. So I think they're hoping to cash in on some nostalgia from people, or people that picked up StarCraft II, StarCraft II in like 2013 and never were able to play StarCraft I because there was like a decade between StarCraft and StarCraft II. So I think there's a lot of money on the table for them. I think it's a smart move. Again, I'm going to play the fire out of it. Very, very excited for it. Yes, I mean, it's StarCraft. Like, what more can you say?
Yeah, I'll probably play a lot of it. I was trying to think about which games I would like to see remastered. Warcraft 2, if they would remaster Warcraft 2, I would be plenty happy about that. There's a game I played, Supreme Commander. Do you remember that game?
Yes, I do.
That would be fantastic remastered. A Descent Free Space, by far my favorite computer game of all time.
Okay.
That would be a fun one. Do you have any others that you'd like to see?
They would revoke my Star Wars nerd if I didn't say TIE Fighter.
Very good.
TIE Fighter is an all-timer for me. I already said any of the Command and Conquer games. Red Alert is my personal favorite. Just because I like the Soviet weirdness that happened with it. And then this isn't a PC game, but give me Mass Effect 2 or give me Death on remasters. I just got to throw that in there at any point I possibly can. But no, I think StarCraft is a step in the right direction. Age of Empires is another one that I really, really loved because it was kind of history, but kind of RTS-y, so it had the best of both worlds. Age of Mythology was in that same series. So I love those that were kind of dipping their toe in the history pool, but not necessarily history based or history cemented, kind of loose history, for lack of a better term.
You got me thinking about Star Wars games. I don't know if this one's old enough to remaster or if it was popular enough, but I loved Republic Commando. Did you ever play that game?
So I never got into Republic Commando. I've heard fantastic things. It kind of hit me in the time when I wasn't playing PC games and I never had an original Xbox. I had like weird console jumps because I had to pay my own money for consoles. So I went from like Super Nintendo to like a PS2 to a 360. Like just, I didn't get anything in between. So I never got to play Republic Commando, but I heard really good things about it.
Yeah, I was looking it up to see when it was released. It was released in 2005, probably not old enough, but that was right in the heart of my PC gaming days, and I quite liked that game. So moving on getting closer to our bigger topic, Suicide Squad, there's a little bit of DC news before we get into that, and that is Man of Steel 2. Are they actually calling it Man of Steel 2?
I haven't heard anything other than the sequel to Man of Steel greenlit.
So the Man of Steel 2 has been greenlit. I only really have one note of this, and that is the groan sound.
The groan sound? If you had told me after they launched this DC Extended Universe that Man of Steel would be the best of the three films, I may have just been like, well, that sucks. But yeah, I think it's interesting after the backlash against Suicide Squad and BVS that now they're like, well, I guess we'll greenlight another Superman movie. We left it off of our slate, and now everybody hates the first two movies. So let's give it another shot, I guess. I mean, Cavill has been universally one of the better rated actors in this thing. I think people have liked Cavill. I think they haven't given him much good to do on screen. So I think it's going to be interesting to see where they go with this. And I'm really intrigued to see what they can do, how they can, or try to right the ship. Because the ship is sinking. And we'll talk about that here in a couple of minutes. But I hope that this can right the ship, because I really do want to see DC movies do well.
To that point, I finally saw Batman versus Superman. The only way that I was ever going to see it would be if it was for free and I was confined in a spot for several hours. And that those two situations occurred on my plane ride home from Washington, D.C. And so I actually watched it, and man, that was a bad movie. All of the things I thought it was going to be, it was disjointed. It really didn't have a point. Like they brought in like this, the meanest, baddest dude, villain for Superman. Like they brought him in as like an afterthought, like with 10 minutes left in the movie. And now he's just completely out of the universe. Doomsday's just completely out of the universe now, like with no thought. How is that your plan? Like, hey, you know, you've got this super big bad that's like the baddest dude in your universe, and you're just going to dispatch him 15 minutes into starting this universe? Like, how does that make any sense?
Raymond, these are conversations we could have months ago. Months ago. But yeah, it's awful. It's awful. So I think, not to beat the deadest horse of them all, but yeah, I think the DC animated universe is floundering, and I think they're grasping at straws to try to get something that'll get them some goodwill back. And so I think that's what this move is. That's why they greenlight a Superman movie. It's like, well, this is the best reviewed of the three, so let's give it a shot. It's the only one that doesn't have a zero on Rotten Tomatoes.
Speaking of terrible DC movies, I'm sorry, everybody that saw Batman vs. Superman in May. I just saw it on a tiny screen on the back of a chair that was reclined further than it should have, might I add. And I have to say that that movie was terrible. Then I went and saw Suicide Squad after I got home. And unfortunately, I had about the same response to that. So I guess getting into Suicide Squad, and obviously there'll be some spoilers here. It was really hard to talk about this movie without some spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, you know, pause it. Go see it, come back and listen. Going into Suicide Squad, kind of what are your, I guess, overarching thoughts when you left the theater?
My overarching thoughts were, I was disappointed, but I don't get how people were like, this is the worst movie ever. Like, it's not the worst movie ever. We saw Star Trek 2 weeks ago. Like, this is not, like, this is better than Star Trek. So it was disjointed. One of the things that, like, my favorite part about going to see these movies is the drive home with my wife, because she is just, like, dipping her toe into the nerdy pool. And so I can tell the quality of the film from the quality of questions that she's asking me. And so, like, we left Civil War, and she was asking me these really deep questions about character relationships and how things play out. And we get in the car on our way home from seeing Suicide Squad, and she asked me, so what's the deal with Killer Croc? That was her question. And so if that tells you the caliber of the film, it was okay. Like, I told her in the car, you know, on our drive home, and as we discussed it, I would call it like a 6.5 maybe out of 10, being generous, because I wanted it to be good. I think I'm an optimist when it comes to things like this, so I think there's a lot of good. Like, I think this is the most fun Will Smith has been since Bad Boys 2. I think
that line when he said, do that white people thing,
yes,
for his daughter,
yes,
that
doesn't get in,
cracked me up. I laughed so hard at that spot. And that was, I think we talked about it when we watched the trailer, that was Will Smith being Will Smith. And I have been sorely missing that in my life for a long time. So if I was going to put a check mark in the pro side of this movie, is that they allowed Will Smith to be Will Smith, and it was great.
Yeah, he was oozing charisma like he does so well. I mean, it was Mike Lowry with better aim. It was fantastic. I thought, as Harley Quinn, Margot Robbie was good. As Dr. Quinzel, they didn't do enough to establish that backstory, which is really sad, because I think you can do a really good, there's like a one shot or an episode of the animated series, whichever one is more your flavor, that called Mad Love, where they did a really good job of establishing just how the Joker drives Harley Quinn crazy. And so I think that would have, like, I would have loved to see more of that. You could have done a whole, you know, 45 to 60 minutes of just that, and I would have loved it. I mean, Viola Davis was awesome. We didn't expect anything else from her, other than her being awesome. Because, you know, she's Viola Davis. I think for me, it's easier for me to focus on the bright spots in the film than it is for me to focus on. Because you could, like, it's easy to poke fun at the mess that it was. Because it was a mess. Like, you could tell that there were competing cuts of this film. You could tell that they went back and reshot just by looking at Rick Flagg's hair. It was three different lengths at three different points in the movie. So you could definitely see the three different shots. So yeah, I think for me, there was a lot of a good movie in there, but this just shows you the power of letting a director, letting a filmmaker make the film that they want to make and not bowing to audiences' wishes. Because let's be honest, and this is one of my favorite quotes, if you asked people what they wanted, if Henry Ford asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. And so I think let filmmakers make films. I think that's the saddest thing about this is we've seen the studio interfere with what David Ayer was trying to make, and I think there was a lot of a good movie in there. Yeah, there are some things that were wrong with the script. There's a lot of things that were wrong with the script. I think the Joker didn't know what the Joker was going to be, and so was he Heath Ledger? Was he Jack Nicholson? Was he I just blanked on Luke Skywalker's name. Mark Hamill. Was he Mark Hamill? Like, he was kind of a weird mix of all three of them. And so there were some messy things with the script. Like, it wasn't a perfect script. But I think if you look at the movie, you could tell the movie that Ayer was trying to make and the movie that the studio was trying to make. And I think the movie that Ayer was trying to make was probably better than the film that we got.
So I kind of share your sentiment is that there were bright lights. Like, I think that Margot Robbie was clearly the star of this movie. And you can see that even though the movie, I think, was bad, I think you're being generous with 6.5. Even though the movie was bad, I can see why they locked her up, because she was clearly the star and the parts of the movie that she was in were exciting. And certainly more entertaining. Like you said, Will Smith, I mean, Will Smith was great as Will Smith tends to be whenever you put him in the right spot. But I think that your point about this movie is why it is as bad as it is because it was just disjointed. The pacing was really odd. The cuts were really odd. And I want to think that that was because of studio involvement. And maybe it was because that studio involvement happened in Batman versus Superman as well. But I think the fact that I saw these movies back to back showed a pretty clear line between them. And that's that both felt like an extended trailer. It both felt like a trailer that went on for 2.5 hours because they had these just quick cuts in between seemingly unrelated scenes that there was no real explanation. The flashbacks were just the weirdest thing ever. It was like they were doing like a bad Scrubs impersonation. It was strange. There was no real rhyme or reason. All of it was just messed up. I think that, like, there were the Ocean's 11 part of the movie, which was probably the best part of the movie, the intros of the characters, like, that took way too long. But, like, that could have been a movie unto itself, and I think it would have been a lot better, much better movie, and you could have spent time with the characters and got to know even some of the, you know, ancillary characters and maybe cared a little bit more about them. So, like, there was just so much broken in this movie. There was so much that they were trying to do. They didn't do any of it. And even the performances weren't good. Like, the Enchantress was not good. That was a bad performance. We talked a little bit at the top about Killer Croc and the mess that was, but the performance wasn't good. I thought that performance was really bad. Like, I thought that it was, like, it was borderline Razzie worthy. I thought it was a terrible performance. And I know that not all of those actors can be bad. I know that. So that speaks to some directorial problem in that all of those actors gave bad performance. Flag was not a great performance. Like, it was the fact that all of those happened, pretty much the only two characters that I come away think are the three, I guess, maybe Viola Davis, who played angry and stoic pretty well. But I think that the only two characters that I really came away thinking, oh, that was a good performance, were two that just let their natural charisma show. And I think that that says a little bit about maybe what was lacking in the directorial department here.
Yeah, and I will hesitantly disagree with you about Diablo. I think he wasn't given much to do. I think Jay Hernandez could have done a lot with more. I think he did more with what he was given than he should have, if that makes sense. Like, he was given very little to do. It was a very one-note character. There's not a lot of growth. It was a lot of gangbanger jokes and, you know, the Spanish cussing. You could take it or leave it. But I think for me, and you hit on something that was actually really funny. You said it felt like an extended trailer. And that was one of the things that, you know, reports were coming out, you know, as it's really funny when you see a movie that gets early poor reviews and then all of the really weird reports that come out, is that one of the there were competing cuts of this film, doing air quotes, basically David Ayer's cut of the film, and then the cut that the studio had, the company that made the trailer, the initial trailer made. That's like the story, is that people reacted positively to the trailer, and so they had the trailer company come in and recut the film, and then they reshot stuff to fill it in, which is just asinine. It makes zero sense.
I didn't even know that story, but it makes complete sense that that's the cut that they used then, because that's exactly what it felt like. It felt like a trailer. That's exactly what it felt like.
Well, you see, like, the most out of place musical cue ever is the Eminem song. I'm like, what? Like, where is that coming from? That fits nothing. Like, that made zero sense.
Yeah, and they put like seven songs in the first 10 minutes and then like none for like the rest of the movie. It was so confusing.
Yep. Well, and they cut out, there were things in the trailers that weren't in the films that were actually bright spots. There was a lot of mess in it, but
they made the bar scene worse than what it looked like it was going to be in the trailer. They made it a lot worse than what it looked like it was going to be in the trailer.
It was very nonsensical. It was very, very nonsensical. I will give you that. Like, I don't get it. For me, I'm still hopeful because there are really good characters in this one. Like, I would love to see a whole film of Deadshot and Batman. Like, I would love to see that movie. Because they could really go for, there's a kind of a subplot in the comics where Deadshot has this like mental block about killing Batman. Like, he's had him dead in his sights for a couple of times and he just can't do it. And I would love to see Will Smith do that, because Will Smith can do drama really well. So I would love to see him and, you know, Batman chasing him having Batman in his crosshairs, and then his daughter's voice running through his head and he just can't pull the trigger. Like, I would love to see that film on film. I would love to see just a Harley Quinn Joker heist film with Batman chasing him. Like, I would love to see that. We were introduced to a lot of really cool ideas and cool concepts in this. I think this is the best on-screen comic accurate portrayal of Batman we've seen. Batman's no longer killing people, which is a plus in my book. But yeah, it was a very good portrayal. The I don't want to do this in front of your daughter line, all that was fantastic. And he was only in the movie for like 10 seconds. You can say what you want about him punching Harley Quinn in the face, but he was going out of his way not to let her drown. So that's very, very, I guess, very comic accurate to what we want to see out of Batman. So I was very impressed with that. I mean, we can talk about the Joker. We can just go that way now because I keep on kind of skirting around it. What did you think? Like, I want to get your thoughts on it, right?
First of all, we get it. The Joker's coming. She can stop checking her phone. Like, that, like, the third time she checked her phone and it was like, hey, sweetums, you know, I just got to pick up some chicken from the store, but I'll come and save you in a second. Like, that, I lost my mind. That was the worst thing ever. I actually didn't think the Joker was bad. I know that people don't like it. I thought it was fine. I didn't see anything about it that was offensive to me. I thought there were some parts of it that it was a little over the top, but I think he played it like an insane person, and I think that he did it pretty well. I don't know why, where all the anger comes from. I think that anybody being the Joker after Heath Ledger was going to, no matter what he did, he was not going to win over the fanboys. It was not going to happen. And so I don't think he did a bad job. I think everything about what he did there, I think everything about it has been blown over the top. And I know maybe he didn't give the best effort in what he was trying to do, but I think it worked. I was completely fine with it, and I didn't understand what all of the hubbub was about before the movie.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I would love to see David Ayer's original cut, because Jared Leto has come out and said that these are his words, that there was enough Joker cut from the film to make a whole nother movie. And so I would love to see that fleshed out more, because I honestly, like, it was, for me, it was legitimately kind of unnerving in times. Like, the scene that will jump out to me is when Ike Barinholtz, the prison guard, is sitting in the kitchen, and the henchman says, "You should shut up now." And then you just see the hand slide across. I was like, okay, this is, like, we're for real. Like, there was a lot of really good stuff, and I would love to see that character explored more, because I thought Leto did a really good job with what he was given. I think there was a lot of there's a lot left on the table. I thought, but really, when push comes to shove, for me, is did it feel like the Joker? And that's a really big question to ask, because the Joker is not one thing, and that's why the character is so cool. And for me, it felt like the Joker. Like, it felt like kind of what they're doing with the Joker in DC Comics right now, where there's three incarnations of the Joker, and which one is it? And I think that's one of the cool things, is like, you know, that you've got the cartoony Jack Nicholson 1969 style, you know, goofy clown Joker. You've got the Heath Ledger sadist. And then you've got this, like, mob boss kind of slick back juggalo with an actual knife situation, which was what I think Leto went for. And I thought he did a really good job of it. The tattoos didn't bug me as much as I thought they would. You know, one of the things that people were talking about is, you know, wait till you see him in motion, you probably won't notice them. And I didn't really notice them that much. There was a really the scene where he's pining after Harley and he's laying in the knives and the guns around him. I thought the knives and the guns around him were a little bit overdone, but the drawn smile on his face, I saw that and I was like, oh, like, crap. Like, there's some real stuff about to go down. But I thought he was underused, and I think that could have been a lot better, a lot deeper. And I'm assuming they signed him on for multiple pictures, so I would love to see that explored more, because I thought Leto had a really good interpretation that would be better served in a larger dose.
So to kind of wrap this conversation up, and I kind of want to run this by you, is when I thought about this movie and why it disappointed me, I think the biggest reason it disappointed me is because in the end it was a generic, formulaic superhero movie. Like, that's what it was. Like, I think they set out to make an edgy movie, but what they really did was put some hot pink lipstick on a librarian. Like, they essentially went out and made the exact same superhero movie that has been made 1,000 times, and they thought that since they're doing it with villains, and if they had Harley Quinn do some crazy stuff or had some villains do some crazy stuff, then that would make it somehow edgy or interesting, and it just wasn't. And they didn't do a good job explaining the motivations of the characters. They didn't do a good job really doing anything. And as a result, what you ended up with was the forces of good, which in this case we were supposed to believe are bad, but most of them, of their own free will and volition, decided to fight for the fate of the world, which seems to say something about how quote unquote bad they were. Yeah. That the forces of good would triumph over evil, where in reality the only actual force of evil in the entire movie was Viola Davis, and she won. So like it was just a weird. The whole thing about it was weird, and I think they really missed the mark, and I think that maybe this movie's a lot worse than you do.
Yeah, and I the question that this is the question that really got me. Again, I thought the movie was good, not great. Again, I would give it like a 6 or 6.5. But the question I asked is, if there weren't any superpowered protagonists in this film, would it have played out any differently? And the answer is no. Like, the Navy SEAL teams could have done all the things that the Suicide Squad did with the same amount of efficacy. I think that's the big question. Is like, did it matter that these people were quote-unquote supervillains? The answer is no. And so I think that shows you how how kind of disconnected this was to what it was supposed to be. Again, I think there's a lot of good in it. I mean, we didn't even touch on the Flash cameo. That was probably one of the best parts of the film. Side note, the Flash looks fantastic. Like, hopefully, and here's the other...
But they're going to ruin it. They ruined everything.
Here's the silver lining to the cloud. This was the last movie they wrapped on before Jeff Johns was named as the executive creative director, whatever the heck they're calling him. So hopefully we'll see some good Jeff Johns stuff in Wonder Woman. And then again, Jeff Johns understands these characters, and I'm assuming he's on set for Justice League because they have got to get this thing right. So I think that's the thing, is like they could have accomplished all of these tasks without Task Force X. And that's really where the movie hangs for me, is that that's really why it was so disappointing to me, is that it didn't matter that you had El Diablo. It didn't really matter that you had Deadshot. It didn't really matter that you had Harley Quinn. Because really, it was shooting these zombie things in the head and then blowing something up with some explosives.
Oh yeah, hold on a second. We're supposed to believe that Diablo hitting this thing with like fire for 15 minutes, like pure fire into his chest, didn't kill it, but some demo charge did. Like, and guy that dies below the demo charge, like, he's given up his life, and we're supposed to care that he's given up his life, but he said like four words. I don't even know his name. I just know that he's dude's right hand man, but
SEAL team guy.
Yeah, but SAG doesn't, like, Flag doesn't care at all. That, like, it's a mess, giant mess.
So the thing I will agree with you, it was a mess. The things that make me hopeful again, I think, are Deadshot was really good. I thought Will Smith was great. Margot Robbie was great. Ezra Miller was really cool as the Flash. It was a very cool cameo. And the post-credit, mid-credit scene made me really, like, whoever conceived that scene, even though it's super redundant with what they've already done and what they've already shown us, understands the character dynamics. Because, yeah, we know that Batman is assembling the Justice League. Like, we saw it at the end of BVS. We saw it in the Comic-Con footage. But the back and forth between Amanda Waller and Bruce Wayne shows that somebody knows what's going on. Because in every incarnation of those characters, they despise each other, absolutely despise each other. And she knows his secret and he knows her secrets. And so it's kind of this cold war between the two characters. And so I think, like, that's some very, very good subtext that was there, which makes me hopeful for the future, because whoever conceived of that scene obviously knows what the heck is going on and understands these characters on a deeper level than just, let's make Will Smith look cool and do Will Smith things, and let's show probably too much butt of Margot Robbie walking around. That was gratuitous. I was moderately offended by that.
I was more than moderately offended. The side of me that reads Jezebel on the daily was deeply offended by everything that was happening there.
Just unnecessary. Yeah. Just unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's. Oh, we didn't even talk about Killer Croc being overtly racist. Like, what are you going to say?
It's telling that we had a discussion about the whole film and didn't talk about four characters.
Yeah, because
like, we didn't talk about
useless.
Didn't talk about Katana. Didn't talk about Killer Croc. Didn't talk about Captain Boomerang. And who's the... Oh, Slipknot. We didn't talk about Slipknot.
You called that, by the way.
I told you. I knew it. Absolutely. Well, I thought it was... That scene was hilarious, too, by the way, though. Captain Boomerang tricking him, basically. Like, I want to see if this thing is real or not. Let's get this guy that punched a woman and clearly is a misogynist to get his head blown up to see what's going on.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's funny that you called it, but that's about enough destroying this movie. Let's move on to my favorite segment every week. Don't sleep. What do you got?
So we talked about my love for anime earlier. And so I didn't update this in the show notes. So Raymond is going to be completely surprised by
your
this.
Your love for cartoons, you mean?
My love for cartoons, yes. Specific genres of cartoons, Raymond. So
I love Recess. I'm really just messing with people.
I know you are. Raymond, you poke the bear at such expert levels at this point in your life. You've had 30 years to perfect it.
Yeah, it's my Facebook. It's me on Facebook. You're just hearing me on Facebook come out here.
Yeah, if you friend Raymond on Facebook for some epic rants. So my Don't Sleep This Week is a really popular anime that is getting a lot of publicity nowadays. The second season's coming later in the year, but it's called One Punch Man. And so One Punch Man, if you want to watch it, it's on Hulu. But the concept is if you grew up watching like Dragon Ball Z or Naruto or anything like that, where the characters gradually get more and more powerful as the seasons commence. And so by the end of the show, they're essentially an untouchable god. This picks up at that point, basically. And so the concept is Cytoman is the main character, and he's so powerful that he can defeat any villain, anybody, with a single punch. And so he's bored and kind of disillusioned. And so he's like constantly searching for a challenge. And so it's really kind of, I hate the word subversive because it makes it feel like almost dirty, but it subverts a lot of the tropes of like what these types of anime are. And again, it's a send up of everything I grew up watching. I grew up watching Dragon Ball Z, I grew up watching Naruto. And so it's funny to see all of those tropes. It's really like why I love the first Scream movie. Like it takes all of those tropes and turns them on its ear, but then still uses those to tell a story, and it still works as a story. So anything that's like making fun of itself and self-referential while still maintaining its integrity as a narrative, to me, always works really well. So it's just really funny. I laugh out loud a lot watching it. It's really good. So if you're into anime, you grew up watching, you know, the big man spends three episodes gathering energy to throw one big energy bomb, then check out One Punch Man. It's currently streaming on Hulu. Your free access to Hulu is going away soon, so you better go ahead and get that while you still can. So One Punch Man is my Don't Sleep.
I have two from my recent trip to our nation's capital.
I didn't know we were doubling up.
I doubled up. There are one of these I had seen before and one I had not, and was actually quite surprised by how much I liked it. I hadn't intended to talk about it, but let's talk about the one I'd seen before. The one I'd seen before was The Peacock Room in the Freer Gallery of Art, which is on the National Mall. It's in the right around with the Smithsonian's. The original Peacock Room was painted by James McNeil Whistler for a British shipping magnate in 1876. It was brought by Freer and moved to Detroit, and then they brought it to the Freer Gallery on the Mall, and they recreated it. And it's a really cool room. It's an interesting kind of opulent style of the rich in the late 1800s, and it's an interesting room. But that's not what's interesting. You can go see it, it's fine. The Freer is closed right now, but you can go see it. What's interesting is next door in the Sackler art gallery, they have something called the Peacock Room Remix, which is by a guy named Darren Watterson, which is way more interesting and engaging. He recreated the Peacock Room color for color, stroke for stroke, except he did it in decay with all of the shelving falling, all of the Asian pottery that had kind of adorned the original Peacock Room. A lot of it's falling on the floor. And I think that it's just a really interesting kind of comment on what happens over time to the finery in our lives, about how useful the opulence and kind of materialistic pursuits of our lives are in the long run. And it's for some reason, it's something that every time I go to DC, I go back there and I look at it. There's something eminently engaging about it to me. And it's fascinating. I spend 10, 15 minutes in there, and I think it's fascinating. And that art gallery is great. It's oftentimes people miss it because they go to the National Gallery of Art, which is also fantastic. But it's something that I really enjoyed, something that I really love. The second was something I'd never seen before, and I have no idea how I'd never seen it, but it was the Library of Congress And I didn't have much hope for it. I went to go on a Capitol tour, and I saw a tunnel that led to the Library of Congress. I said, well, all right, I'll go walk in there. I walked up to an elevator, went up the elevator to the second floor, I turned right, walked up a staircase, and I walked into a room which reminded me of the Citadel Library that Sam walks into at the end of Game of Thrones. It was stunning. It was absolutely beautiful. And I had never been inside there. I sat inside. They have it all plexiglassed off, so you can't actually get into the room. You could just see down into the room. I must have taken 20 pictures. I stood in there for 15 minutes just marveling at this room. It rivaled anything I have seen in Europe. It was spectacular. The rest of the building is wonderful as well. The arches, the art that's painted all around, the different quotes that they have. It's just... it was spectacular. It's the most surprised I think I've ever been entering a building. I'm a bit of a history guy. I know about a lot of these buildings before I head into them. I knew nothing about the inside of this building for some reason, and it was absolutely spectacular. So if you find yourself in D.C. and you're thinking, should I go to the Library of Congress? The answer is absolutely yes. It is magnificent.
That's awesome. Your don't sleeps are always so classy, right? Like, I feel like I need to step my game up. Like art galleries and stuff, man. I'm over here talking about anime.
Well, I mean, if we want to keep going, the most beautiful Monet I've ever seen in my life is at the National Gallery of Art. It's called, I believe, a Japanese footbridge. It was prettier than the water lilies in Paris. It was unbelievable. The work he did on the water was just spectacular. Spectacular.
You're a man of many layers, Raymond.
Whatevs. I'm going to go watch Parks and Rec, so.
Do it, Doug.
So that's it for us. Thanks for listening this far. If you like what you heard, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review wherever you find us. It helps others find the podcast, and we definitely appreciate it. You could follow me on Twitter. I'm at RM Summerlin. You could follow him on Twitter. He's at GH Goodridge. And until next time, stay woke.
Stay woke, guys.